Welcome to The Bard and Bible, a conversational devotional about scripture, life, and ministry from the perspective of a tabletop missionary still trying to figure out what those words actually mean when you string them together. There's a seat by the fire over there, and it looks like things are just about to get started. Tonight's tale, Punching Gorbash. Hello and welcome. I'm Mike Perna, your resident dwarf bard, and this is the Bard and Bible. I'd offer you something from the larder, but we recently agreed to house a couple of dragons who were on their way to embark on a mystic quest or something. You know how it is when antiquity calls and dragons have to answer. Well, they pretty much left us with a bunch of empty barrels and echoes in the basement and not much else. We'll eventually have the kitchens up and running again, just as soon as the new shipment arrives. When I was a kid, there was a cartoon that floored me. I practically wore out the VHS tape of this show called The Flight of Dragons. It was an animated movie that was loosely based off of this pseudo-fictitious... It's hard to nail down things, but basically what it is that there was a story that a man created that said, if dragons existed and they were real, how would they fly? How would they function? And this book was created. I can't really remember if the book came first and then the movie, or if the movie came because of the book, and it was kind of they were tied together. But as clinical as that sounds and as technical as that sounds, it kind of reminded me of Tolkien creating, you know, worlds for his languages. He had the languages and then he made the world, and the world was awesome. It kind of happened the same with this cartoon called Flight of Dragons, where this person figured out, okay, this is how dragons would function, but what kind of world do they live in? What kind of things happened? And so they created this show called The Flight of Dragons. And the short version of this cartoon, which you should definitely, it's hard to find, but if you can, you really need to see it. The short version is that magic is dying. Technology, the intellect of man is taking over magic, and people are no longer believing in fairies and dragons and wizards, and so they are all losing power. So three of the great wizards get together and say, we need to create a magic realm. We need to create a place where the land of magic is safe. But one of these wizards, the fourth one, named Omadon, the Red Wizard, voiced by James Earl Jones, by the way, so you know he's bad. Omadon says that he is going to manipulate man. He's going to make them destroy each other. His power is growing while theirs is diminishing. He has no fear of them. And so the other three get together and they say, we're going to have to find a champion who's going to rise up and defeat Omadon so that he cannot win. I say all of that to introduce you to a couple characters, specifically Gorbash. Gorbash is a dragon, and Gorbash is young, he's impetuous, he is being mentored by this older dragon named Smurgle, and he's kind of one of the two house dragons of Carolinus the Green Wizard, who's one of the major characters in the story. And Gorbash is introduced to Sir Peter. Sir Peter is somebody who's a man of science and technology. He's a man from our world, and he's brought into the magical world as kind of as their champion. And as they start talking about prophecies and antiquity and champions and all that stuff, Gorbash, this giant hulking dragon, looks at Sir Peter, who is this little insignificant nothing character, this failed inventor, salesman. It's not really exactly sure what he's good at, but at the time Carolinus finds him, he's pitching a board game to a pawn shop dealer. This is the kind of guy we're talking about. Peter is not impressive. But so when Gorbash kind of leans in and he says to Peter, Sir Peter, I hope your armies are really something else because we need power to fight Omadon. And Peter just gets this confused look, and Carolinus chimes in. He says, Sir Peter has no armies. Gorbash, kind of taken aback, starts screaming. He starts, what good is he? And you know what? I could explain this, but I'm actually going to play this because you need to understand just how annoying and obnoxious Gorbash is right here, because it's going to help you understand the rest of what I'm going to talk about.
Well, Sir Peter, old buddy, your armies better be worth their salt. We need power.
My armies?
Sir Peter has brought no armies.
What? No armies?
Will you please?
What good is he? What good is he? What good is he?
That nasally, chalkboard scratching tone? That's Gorbash. The reason I wanted to play that, the reason you needed to hear what Gorbash sounds like, is because I'm going to tell you that that voice lives in my head. That voice is kind of sitting in the back of my mind all the time. I just got done a couple episodes ago talking about, you know, imposter syndrome and how I have it. And most of us have it. In fact, I was talking to somebody after I recorded that one and pretty much said that, you know, I was struggling with it as I was talking about it. And, you know, we both were. And there's that voice that I named him Gorbash for this specific moment. I named that voice that sits in the back of my head going, what good is he? What good? You have nothing. You have absolutely nothing to contribute to this. You have absolutely no value, no worth. You are meaningless and pointless to this. That voice, I named him Gorbash because I needed to put a name to it, because I wanted to punch him square in the face, and I needed to know what his name was. Now, granted, it could just be me kind of personifying this emotional thing, or you never know. Maybe it could be that, you know, I actually am dealing with, you know, my version of Screwtape who's sitting on my shoulder and whispering, and his name, I'm freaking calling him Gorbash. He's a jerk. Whether it's a personification or an actual kind of spirit thing, I don't know. But I hate him. And And this is exactly what I want to talk to you guys about. Because there's a couple things that I wanted to bring up, and I wanted to look at. One of them is in scripture, and one of them is in a song. And in both cases, I wanted to point out something, that voice is actually the one that's meaningless. That voice is the one that I ask, what good is he? Because it's not about how good I am. It's not about how good you are. It's about how good God is. And when I thought about how I could bring that to you guys, I realized there's a bunch of different Bible passages I could talk about, bunch of different stories that could be the extrapolation of the text. But oddly enough, there's one that's sitting with me recently, and that's the story of Gideon. Gideon is in the book of Judges, and I spend a lot of time in Judges just because it's one of my favorite books to read. It's full of such amazing stories, and it also reminds me that this whole idea of cycling through being really close to God, loving him, and then failing, or then falling away, and then failing miserably, only to come back. This is not new. People have been doing this for a very long time. The book of Judges is nothing but a bunch of cycles of people doing this to themselves over and over and over again. God is amazing. God is just kind of there. Oh my goodness, God, we need your help because everything sucks. Over and over and over again. In Gideon's time, they were about to get overrun. And Gideon marches out there, brings thousands of guys, roughly 32,000 guys, if you look at the text. But God looks at that and says, yeah, by the way, this is too many guys. So Gideon gets up and says, anybody who wants to leave, you are free to leave. I'm not going to make you stay here to fight. And 22,000 of them leave, leaving only 10,000 guys. And you think, oh my goodness, it's an entire, you know, legions of this foreign army against 10,000 guys. They're going to get slaughtered. But God said, you know what, Gideon? still entirely too many guys. I need you to get rid of some more. We're going to go down to the water, and the guys who are drinking water a certain way, you can keep them. The rest of them, you send home. By the time he was done, he had 300 guys against an entire army. Now, again, I'm going to tell you to read the book of Judges, specifically chapter 7, to read about Gideon and all this cool stuff, because it's not a, like I could tell you about how cool Gideon was here, because it kind of was awesome the way he tricked the invading armies to think that he had way more guys than he did, and they ended up running, and it was a bit of tactical genius. But that's not the point of this story, at least not in this particular element of the story that I'm telling you about tonight. This story breaks down to realizing that it's God. It's not you. It's not your ability. It's not your strength. It's not your skill. It's God. Gideon's story is one that we remember because God had a victory. Gideon, you know, when Gideon's story starts, he's actually kind of a whiny, know-nothing kind of scaredy cat. He's running and he's hiding. And even when God says, Gideon, I need you to do something for me, he says, all right, God, now I don't know if you actually need me to do anything. I need to know. So I'm going to put this fleece here. And if you make it, you know, wet with the dew, but the floor is dry, that's you. I got it. So you go ahead. And God did. He says, no, that's a neat trick, but I really like, and so he gives another test and says, this time make the floor wet and the wool dry. Look, Gideon is a loser. Let's just call it like it is. Gideon isn't some grand hero. He's a loser. Hiding on the threshing floor. Trying to convince God that you really need to prove that you want me to do this. This was never Gideon's fight. It was God's. And so God's like, you're not going to have anything on you that lets you claim this. This is mine. So why am I telling you this in light of, you know, this idea, this voice in your head saying, what good are you? It's because the voice means nothing. Because he's pretty much right. You know, in Gideon's case, he's 100% right. What good was he? The answer is he's the one God chose. And he's the one God moved through. So something that I still tell myself all the time when that voice sits in the back of my head and Gorbash is yelling at me saying, what good are you? My response is simply to say that I'm the one that God chose. That's all I have to offer. But I'm pretty sure it's good. It doesn't make it not suck, but it reminds me that he's kind of right, but it doesn't matter that he's right. Because it's never been about me. It's about God. The song I wanted to bring up is from the guys, Shane and Shane, who are, you know, I don't listen to a lot of Christian music, but they are one of the bands that I will always sign up for. I've seen them live a bunch of different times. They are amazingly talented musicians. And, on one of their albums, Pages, is a song called Embracing Accusation. And it kind of brings home this exact same vibe, what I'm talking about. It is a terrible song. In a lot of ways, because it's basically like, I'm garbage, I'm useless, I deserve hell, God doesn't care, shouldn't care about me, I'm lost, and it's just this litany of terrible things about us because of sin and because of failure. It's a hard song to sit and listen to, but there's this one point where it all tweaks. Like the devil, it talks about the fact that the devil is singing a song about how terrible we are, but he forgets the refrain being that Jesus saves. That despite all of this stuff, despite the fact that we bring nothing to the table, despite the fact that we can never earn salvation, despite all of that, God gives it to us. God has called us his children. It's a beautiful and wonderful thing. When we realize that it's not about us, because it's never been about us, because it never could be about us. Gorbash, that little voice in the back of my head saying, you know, what good are you? He shuts up. Or if he doesn't shut up, his voice goes from this annoying, grating screech in the back of my head to just this quiet whisper. And my answer is, you're right. I'm not good. But God is. And he has made me righteous. It's not me. It's him. I might have started out with 32,000 guys, but I got 300 now because it's not about my glory. It's not about my skill. It's God. And, you know, I needed to be reminded of that today. I needed to be reminded of that, and I needed to punch Gorbash square in the face and say, you're right, but you need to shut up right now. God is still God, and he is good. And he loves me in spite of the fact that I am utterly unlovable. And that's kind of where I want to wrap things up. But before I do, I think there's something that it's important that I need to bring up here. Because whenever you're talking about this level of realization, this understanding that, you know, I'm in the middle of something that there's this constant thing in my head that says I'm not worthy, I'm not good enough, I don't deserve salvation, all that stuff. It has the potential to weigh us down, has the potential to put us into a place that we get stuck in. And as a guy who gets stuck in sometimes, and being among a people who get stuck in sometimes, in that time between realization that things are bad and the time that we gear up and punch Gorbash, we need to be able to see each other for where we are and what we need. And some things need to be, there's some airing of grievances, if you will. In the tavern I posted, I said, we're dealing with climbing out, we're dealing with dealing with issues and struggles and all that stuff. But I don't want to just give a pile of advice on how to deal with struggle. I want people to share what frustrates you. When you're in the midst of struggle, when you're in the midst of dealing with the problem, and it's weighing heavy on you still, but you're making your way out, what frustrates and annoys you? And I shared mine kind of as the kindling to get the fire going. And I said, I hate it when people just randomly quote scripture at me. It's not because scripture is bad by any means. I love it. The problem exists when it's just, here, we're going to throw scripture at it until you feel better. Because I know most of those scripture verses. I've read most of them. And while there's lots of stuff in the Bible that I still need to learn, and there's lots of stuff that God can speak to me through, in that moment, when I'm just dealing with the suck, you're not helping, and you're certainly not contributing any new information, because I know those verses. I've studied those verses. In some cases, I've written 30-page papers on the use of the original language and how that affects the reading of those verses. I know them. I'm just struggling with them. Likewise, other people started chiming in with their own kind of frustrations, their own kind of annoyances. And they're all things that I've heard before. And I kind of want this to be a time of airing of grievances, and also that we can learn. That we can learn that in the midst of our helping, we might actually be frustrating. In the midst of trying to give aid, we may actually be annoying. Jeff Jackson brought up a big one, and this is one that's a constant annoyance, is the idea of how he hates being talked at instead of talked with or talked to. The idea that you're just throwing stuff, you're throwing word pasta up against the wall and seeing if it sticks. Like you're not actually trying to help. You're just like here's problem, fix problem. And that also reminded me of Andrew Wall, who said that specifically he hates it when people try to fix him or fix a person. Like they're broken in a way that individual has the means to be able to fix. And we don't work that way. People don't need to be fixed. And even if they do need to be fixed, we're not capable of doing that. An interesting twist was something that TR said. TR Knight came in and said that he hates it when people say, just let me know how I can help. Because when he's so focused and working on that struggle, just that generic, oh, let me know if there's something I can do, it's annoying because he doesn't know how to help. He doesn't know how he needs to be helped. And that's something that I don't think we always realize. It's not like, dealing with struggles is not insert tab A into slot B and come up with praising Jesus C. There's work and effort and angst. And when you're in the middle of all this whirlpool of stuff, you don't often know how to respond to that. Like, let me know I can help. I don't even have the mental capacity to answer that question. The thing that I am gonna, if nothing else, I'm going to steal the crap out of what Jay Saunders said, because Jay came in and he put a term to the idea of somebody who comes in, drops some scripture, drops some inspiration, and then leaves to try and go and fix someone else and trying to answer all the problems of the world without actually sticking around to actually do the work of solving them. He called them seagull Christians because they go out and then they do their thing and then they leave and they go back home. Guys, all of this stuff, this is other people contributing to this conversation, but I can vouch for it that I've been on the receiving end of this, and I appreciate that people are trying to help. But at the end of the day, if nothing else, you're just taking somebody who's in the midst of struggles, in the midst of figuring stuff out, and adding to that frustration and adding to the noise. Instead of adding to the noise, maybe it's time that we be quiet. Maybe it's time that we sit and be with that person. Maybe it's time that we put in the work to say, I'm going to tell you I'm going to try and offer this. And if it's not good, just let me know and I'll try something else. Maybe figure out with that person instead of for that person what they need. That voice in the back of your head is a liar. He's stupid and wrong, and you can freaking nail Gorbash to the wall. He wasn't a huge part of that story. In fact, he was asleep for most of it. You, on the other hand, you are very much a part of the story, and you will certainly not be asleep through it. There will be struggle, and there will be difficulty, and there will be triumph. Because it was never about you anyway. You are telling God's story. You are a dwarf bard. And you can't let anybody consider you suboptimal. Because you are the one God chose. So being suboptimal ain't even on the table. I pray that that voice would become a whisper and eventually become silent. Let Gorbash fade into the distance, and I will see you next time on the Bard and Bible.